Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 396 of the Roguecast, recorded December 6, 2022. Comes Satan's Flame or Soggy Toad? It is the first podcast of December and the nearing the last podcast of the year.
That's true. As we do this, we've just been debating the fact that it doesn't feel like December at all right now. We had some cold weeks. Now we're in the midst of like mild to humid, nasty temperatures.
Yeah.
Thanks, Randy. You wished it upon us.
I enjoy December in the 70s. One of the upsides of living in Texas. And I will brook no discontent.
Yeah, that's fine.
Come, you get your
Satan
day. Flame or soggy toes. You can try to explain it.
I can try to explain that, but I'm not going to.
It's better not to.
That was an off-air thing. But this is a giant week for comics.
It is a giant and a giant good week.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff we really liked. It's new books, tons of graphic novels and stuff too.
Yeah. There's also a bunch of games.
Yep, and I don't know. We're gonna have some cool features and things to talk about.
Yeah. So there's also a lot of trailers we'll be talking about.
Yep. Oh right. Yeah. This is gonna definitely be a movie trailer day. We're gonna talk about Cocaine Bear and others.
Yes. like you led with Cocaine Bear. That makes sense.
I know what our people are here for. It's not the Super Mario movie, although we're gonna talk about that too.
Not Indiana Jones. Not Guardians of the Galaxy. Not Transformers: Beast Wars.
Cocaine Bear.
So game wise. The big release is Dragonlance, Shadow of the Dragon Queen.
Right. Dragonlance is a property that's been around since, I think, early 80s, like 83 or something like that.
What's its major hook?
There are dragons.
It is a world of warring dragon armies, I guess I would say. But it's kind of like, there's not like quite an easy elevator pitch. You know, one of the things is, to me, at least as far as I know, I'm sure there was a precedent for it before, or an antecedent. It is one of the first fantasy worlds I ever heard of that had that was post cataclysm. Like there had been a massive like event that had like meteors from the gods that had like left the world in shambles, and it had rebuilt some. But there's like pockets of like there's whole cities and stuff, but they feel very isolated, and people don't know what's going on in other places in the world. So when war starts to stir up, and dragons are returning, and these draconian armies, which are like dragon men, but like mean dragon men. When they start returning, people are like scared and confused. They have no idea what's going on.
Right.
The books that they put out back in the day that were a big part of it, plus the art by like Larry Elmore and Clyde Caldwell and some of those dudes from D&D, that was a big part of it. They had their own sort of Fellowship of the Ring type characters, which were a pretty interesting mixture of characters. Some of the like notably one of those characters dies in like the first or second book, and you know it was kind of a big thing at the time. But like that first book in the Dragonlance novels back in the day was based on the actual games people who wrote the modules were playing and test playing with their friends and stuff.
But also, I guess the notable things is there's no clerics in this world, at least at the start. The gods have turned their back on men.
Right. So healing magic was not a thing, or its slow return is the big story.
And I feel like magic was a little more corrupting, like Raistlin in particular. Like
when you took your test at a certain point, you know, it's essentially the SATs of wizards. It could go horribly wrong. He was left a broken person. Magic was like they leaned into the D&D's kind of the breakdown of the alignments, so that there were like three orders of magic, sort of good, evil, and neutral wizards. They were like red for neutral, white for good wizards, black robes for evil wizards, stuff like that.
But this setting has been out of print for about almost 10 years. The last time they did was something in 3.5. Yep. There was no 4th edition Dragonlance. I think the focus they're putting on 5th edition is that they seem to be focusing on this is a world at war.
Yes, it is, and so much so that there is a accompanying board game
that chronicles the
battle side of it.
There's three versions that came out. There's the regular rulebook, there's the alt cover, as always, and there's one that's the regular cover with a foil treatment that comes in a box with a box co-op game by Rob Devoe, of Pandemic Legacy and numerous games like that.
He's one of the great designers of the Legacy games, like the inventor of the Legacy format.
So you basically can play out some of the mass combat. You're supposed to be able to, I believe, coordinate it with the game. So
the Dragonlance, Nick, I don't know if you know this, but like in the books, that is like literally the invention of that. This like master blacksmiths makes these, you know, powerful dragonlances eventually that can be mounted on good dragons and take, so they can take to the sky and battle with the evil dragons and like spear them and kill them. It is a literal weapon you can get in the game.
The only way to get the board game right now is in the deluxe pack that comes with the board game and the rule book.
Through some sort of weirdness of shipping.
Yeah, they are going to make the board game standalone. It just hasn't hit yet. We think it may not hit till next year. We're not sure. We don't have a date on it yet. But
yeah, it's one of those things that it can be played standalone, but their goal, what they want people to do, ideally, is to play it in concert with role-playing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just getting the book, but you know, you can get the board game if you... The only way to get the board game right now is to get that box, which we have a handful of.
Yeah.
And then
so that's just, at least for the short term, that is just the way it is, unfortunately.
One of the other big things we got this week is Frosthaven.
Oh, right.
We have one copy. It is a big, massive, expensive sequel to Gloomhaven. It is a standalone.
Right, and Gloomhaven itself is something of a legacy game.
Yep.
But that, you know, like Descent, you know, some years ago... Chronicles more like, you know, a dungeon crawl in a dark fantasy world. They have like their own fantasy races, and they tend to have that darker, edgier look. There's, you know, creepy rat men and gunpowder and, you know, alchemical bombs and stuff like that. And those are somewhat common now in D&D. But again, just imagine everything with a little bit more of that Warhammer kind of dark spin on it.
Yeah.
And you give orders to your characters through cards. You'll have like hands of cards that you draw and decks that you build for characters within it. And it is pretty neat. I played a little bit of Gloomhaven. And in Gloomhaven, like, you have to be careful. Like, you don't, like, you might draw a card that has like a really dope attack, but like, when you use it, it's not easy to some of those big attacks to get it back into your hand. So you have to be kind of careful about how you know what attacks you use. Anyway, it is very fun though, and building your character up is super cool. So I assume Frosthaven is a wintry environment version of that.
Wintry environment. I guess there are some different rules.
New monsters and races.
One of the people who picked it up said it's harder. He said it is a very challenging version.
He said he was actually going back and playing some Gloomhaven. I was like, oh, is this the Dark Souls of board games?
Maybe.
Is this for the badasses?
Maybe.
You think you're some Billy Badass out there in Gloomhaven?
But this was Kickstarter only. I don't have it on my distributor list just yet, so I don't know when. I assume eventually we'll get it. But this one copy we have... if you have a gamer out there who lets you want to drop a lot of money for the ultimate Christmas present, this would be that.
Yeah, you want to hurry on that.
yeah, one left, and once it's gone, it's gone. Less expensive, but also in the theme, is Here to Slay, S-L-E-I-G-H.
Right, like Santa's sleigh?
It's an expansion of the Here to Slay board card game, which is super fun. It's the same people do Happy Little Dinosaurs. I played it again recently. It's a fun little game that you can play pretty quickly and has a bunch of expansions. This is the wintry expansion of it.
Mm-hmm.
We got another Kickstarter thing we got, Paperback Adventures. This is a solo deck-building game with, as it says, roguelike elements, which I always forget what roguelike means.
I believe it means that it has like sort of procedurally generated... sort of randomized elements, like it'll build dungeons or it'll build the threats or enemies.
Okay.
It'll algorithmically create them. And I might be bungling this. Y'all can message me and tell me. But
Paperback is a deck builder that uses its sort of novel themes. The theme is like being like books and that kind of thing. This is Paperback Adventures, which is a solo version of it. You get the core book, and then you buy essentially modules to add on to it. And the three modules available at first are Damsel, which appears to be a sort of like swashbuckling... gender flip thing.
Yep.
Ex Machina, which seems to be a sci-fi 50s robot type thing.
Mm.
And Plot Hook, which is pirates, maybe in the Peter Pan vein.
That's cool.
All look cool.
I want to play the 50s sci-fi one.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
It all sounds fun.
If I'm not mistaken, that same customer we were talking with earlier was saying that his wife adores this series.
Yep.
That's like, that's the main game she likes to play.
Yeah.
And he's like, come, we want to play more group games and stuff like that. And she's like, no, I'm playing my solo game. Get out of my face.
Yep.
but that is good to know that, like, she like, locked onto it and is really enjoying it.
We got a couple big... There's a lot of big games releasing right here at the end of the year.
Yeah, you know. hit that Christmas crowd.
Namiji, which is the spiritual sequel to Takedo, which is the game about the tour of Japan.
Yep.
This is the fishing village version of it. You go out in your boats, you circle the board, mm-hmm. you fish, you gather, you build up a little grid of fish, you push your luck with a little bag of crabs and shrimp, you gather little portfolio, like little images of like 1 to 5 cards that should slowly make a picture of a whale or a squid, and whoever has the image, whoever completes it first gets bonus
so
points.
So you're trying to compete in the sort of chill game of being the best fisherman or whatever in Japan.
Yep.
That does sound like the
it's fun.
A good laid back conceptual follow up to.
It's laid back in its way, but there is definitely a. When you get to a spot, you have blocked the other people from taking that spot.
So I'm going to fish you to death.
There's a little bit of, like, blocking people from getting the things they want. So.
Sure. Well, you know, like, you can describe Ticket to Ride as a laid-back game.
Yes.
And arguably, like, you can almost kind of, like, slightly be in your own world on your turn. You do your thing, next person does their thing. They take that track that you were looking for, though. You're going to remember them. They're a dead man.
Yes. and then Wingspan Asia, which is a new Wingspan expansion for the popular bird watching game.
Yep.
But it's also a standalone two-player game.
Oh, okay.
So you can play a two-player version of Wingspan.
Nice. Ideal for friends and couples and such.
Yeah. We got a game from Pandasaurus called Wolves, which is about wolf packs. You, like, basically incorporate other wolves into your wolf pack.
Okay.
Which looks really good. It has a bunch of wolf meeples.
Oh, nice.
It's a relatively cheap game, and you get a lot of wolf meeples in it.
Nice.
We got a game called Terracotta Army, which I don't know much about, but look cool.
Huh. I know there's a famous Terracotta Army in China that's, yep. like, one of the most, you know, like, famous historical sites there is.
We've got new Brothers War gift bundles, so we've got bundles of the newest Magic set.
Oh, right. Yeah, these are, like every Magic set has bundles, but there's something...
They do gift bundles. I forget what the deal is. Nick. Oh, it's got a Transformers card in it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
There's a foil card in there.
Maybe some other stuff. Yep.
And then 10 set boosters.
And then
10
boosters, yeah. We got the new Jumpstart. They've been doing Jumpstart in each set, which has not been as loved. This is a standalone Jumpstart set.
Jumpstart being a format, yeah, where you, if you buy any two decks of it, you can combine them, and you have, or any two boosters, you have a deck.
You have a playable
from
deck.
Them.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. You buy two boosters of Jumpstart from any set. You can combine two of them and make a Jumpstart deck.
Yep.
And then we get starter commander decks, which I haven't done in a while. These are actually specifically starter decks. We've got a lot more starter matches.
Starter deck as in, like, ideal for a noob?
I think just that you can play them out of the box as a, you know, I don't think you have to know all the mechanics of them as well.
I see.
I just know they're called starter decks, which I have not made starter decks in a while.
That's good to hear.
So between that, the intro packs we've got, and the... Game Night, which has like 5 decks and is like how to, you know, get a whole bunch of people into Magic. There's a lot more accessible Magic than there used to be for a while there.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I appreciate when somebody comes in and says, I'm just getting into Magic. What can I buy? And I'm like, I have 3 options for you. Instead of the classic, I have 0 options for
you. Yes, that's good. Yeah. We got Clank Catacombs, which is a new take on the Clank game. This is a standalone where you use like tile building, so you build a different dungeon each time, as opposed to the usual Clank has a board.
Yeah.
Y'all played Clank at all? Do you know the deal with Clank?
I'm Clankless.
Do you know why it's called Clank?
No.
Because when you move, you generate sound, the clanking of your armor.
I see.
And if you generate too much sound, the dragon will kill you.
Oh, interesting.
So that is what it is. It's like you are cooperatively trying not to wake whatever monster it is, but you are, as a group, might cause Clank. But it's a competitive game. So, like, you might accidentally cause Clank while you're on your way out of the dungeon and leave him there to die. Yes.
You know what this reminds me of, weirdly? Perhaps you recall this, Randy, the old Laserdisc game, Dragon's Lair. When you first get into the actual Dragon's Lair at the end of the video game,
yep.
you know, the one with the,
yep.
that really great animation mm-hmm. from Don Bluth,
yep.
You spend a while trying to find the princess and trying to not make a sound. All
this.
The piles of gold are teetering and have like a genie lamp on top that's just about to tip, and so the little moves for about like 2 or 3 minutes of just poking around is him just trying to not make a sound. I wonder if somebody was inspired by that, but that makes me want to play it.
It's super fun, and it's a deck builder with a board. This new version, Catacombs, is a standalone that has like a
so the original is like
board.
Is it fantasy essentially
it's fantasy.
Fantasy? Yeah,
there is a space version as well.
Right.
And there's a legacy version. I hear the legacy version is great.
I need to play it now. Let's
all right.
Stop the podcast.
All right. So if you're listening, We just paused the podcast and played 4 hours of Clank, and now we all love it.
I'm a dedicated Clankhead, as we call ourselves, now that I am...
Clankers!
Yeah. We have Ahoy, which is a new nautical-themed game for the people who made Root.
Okay, Ahoy.
So it looks cool. I don't know too much about it. I know it's another sort of, like, piratey game instead of being a war game like Root is, but in the same vein.
Root is a popular game.
It is. We got the Tome of Beasts 3, which is Kobold Press's monster guide. I've looked through this. It's got a ton of cool monsters in it. There's Fae. There's different subtypes of, like, Rakshasa. There's a ton of cool monsters in there.
I'm sure people have heard us talk about Kobold Press before, but, you know, at its heart, aside from their, like, high production values, beautiful paintings,
yep,
all that stuff, the really neat thing is you can get these vast libraries of really well-conceived monsters that your players aren't going to
know
about.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
They that's an exciting thing to do. You know, everybody knows if you run into certain monsters, oh, these guys can flank us. Oh, that can turn me to stone.
Yep.
You're just not going to know with these dudes.
Also, their art and production values are fantastic. We have one limited edition.
Easily, there are
left.
Many times when I'm like, oh, that's better than D&D and Pathfinder,
one limited rulebook left, which has the foil and the leatherette cover and all that stuff. Yeah.
For the discerning DM.
Then we got the expansion for G.I. Joe RPG Operation Cold Iron.
Yep, it's cool looking.
Has the snake armor on the cover.
Yeah, they. Awesome. For those who had G.I. Joe figures back in the day, the snake armor was a very cool thing, in that like mechs and stuff weren't everywhere yet.
Right,
they were just starting to appear if you followed anime and stuff.
Yeah.
But this thing it was armor that fit over your G.I. Joe or Cobra figures and made them all cool, big battle suit. All of their art and stuff on these G.I. Joe games have all been really very cool.
Yeah. They're picking super cool movable.
But no. They
do you remember that it had a, if you didn't have a figure to put in it, there was a sort of a rubber body that it could snap around?
Yeah, I remember that. Was weird.
And that actually was, in its way, more poseable if you did that than a figure.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But you can move the arms, right?
Yeah, you can move the arms.
You can move the arms and the legs. Yeah.
He
clumped around a bit like a Frankenstein.
Deep Six was just a solid piece of plastic, wasn't he?
Or did he
had
arms.
Movable
his
arms. Was, okay. Yeah. And I believe you could...
You could go like that, right?
Maybe. I don't think so. I think you could intubate him and either put air in or out of him so he would sink or swim in the bathtub with you when you were having your G.I. Joe bathtub fun.
Yep, with the shark.
Yes.
S-H-A-R-C. Shark.
Which stands for something, but we can't remember it right now.
No.
There's also an air vehicle as well. It could fly.
That's right. Could fly.
Yep.
And, lastly in the game thing, we got Rock Paper Heroes Enter the Danger Room, which is a card game, X-Men. If you hear Rock Paper Heroes, you probably know what that means.
Interesting.
That kind of thing. All right, let's talk news.
Yep.
Let's talk one. We had one bit of news before we get to all the trailers.
Yep.
That bit of news is kind of a mixed bag. Mike Flanagan and Trevor Macy, who have been doing so many good, like Midnight Mass and Welcome to Bly Manor.
Haunting of Hill House.
Yep. Yep. They did Midnight Club recently.
And then they've got one more. The Poe.
The Poe,
What is that called?
House of Usher? Fall of the House
Fall
of
Usher. House of Usher, yes.
This will be the last thing they do at Netflix because they're moving to Prime, and Netflix has already canceled Midnight Club as a result.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bummed about this.
I mean, is that just a known thing, or did it just not? Did it underperform?
I don't think it... I mean, I guess it's
I
possible
kind of
that
feel
Midnight
like
Club
I heard...
canceled and then they moved.
I didn't hear a ton of buzz, except for some people didn't get into it.
Hmm.
One of those people being you, right? Because you didn't.
It's true.
It.
I didn't love the first episode.
Well, I guess you get what you want. They canceled it, Dave. Are you happy?
Flanagan's been canceled thanks to me. Cancel culture wins.
Well, here's the thing. I think this is going to be mostly invisible to people because
he's still going to be making stuff.
Oh no, he's gone from Netflix to Prime.
I don't, because Netflix, there's more people have Netflix than Prime, and Prime, with exceptions, makes boring shows.
Yeah, but Flanagan doesn't make boring shows.
No, but I'm worried that these...
He's actually quite consistent in his approach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm worried because the executives over at Prime seem to be, like, they seem to make boring shows out of shows that should be better than they are. And they... Lord of the Rings is really... I mean, Rings of Power is really good, although I know some people didn't like it. I thought Rings of Power was really good.
Yeah.
The Boys is really good. Marvel's Mrs. Maisel is really good. They've got a lot of good stuff.
Jack Ryan's solid.
Jack Ryan's okay. Jack Ryan is closer to that line of boring.
And then they've got their new one, with Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oof, that was boring.
Was it boring?
Yeah, the original.
I heard really good things.
It's fine. It's just boring.
Is it boring the way Andor is boring, which is like to say it's actually great?
No, it is not boring the way Andor is boring.
Okay. Just checking.
No,
I haven't sampled these to confirm or deny Randy's reports.
Look, between the three of us here, one of us has watched a lot of Prime. And they are coming. Like, Reacher, also really good.
Yeah.
Although, again, it's closer to that boring side.
No, wrong.
It's just
not boring.
No, not boring. It's, I guess that one is more like, it's not like...
Are you saying it's forgettable?
A little bit. Who is the bad guy in Reacher?
I mean, it was there were a lot of bad guys in Reacher.
What was the story about?
There was some murders. There was a murder investigation.
Okay,
that
this
turned
is
out
my point.
Turned out to have, like, it doesn't have everything.
Well,
doesn't
Reacher's
have to be
brother,
reduced to...
Reacher's brother was killed by a group of corrupt politicians.
Randy
and
needs
police.
Everything to be an elevator pitch.
I need to be able to remember that. I remember watching it. I remember liking it. I don't remember anything that happened. I don't remember a moment. Like, I don't remember a lot of moments from it. And that is a thing that I feel like happens a lot of Prime shows.
Okay. Well,
So that makes me. I'm not saying, oh no, this is terrible. I'm saying it makes me a little worried.
Actually kind of think that Flanagan might could have used a little bit of a shakeup, that he was getting a little complacent in his place at, and that, like, Midnight Mass, although, like, not bad by any means from what I saw, just did, like, it seemed like, for whatever reason, it didn't come together. Maybe people just didn't want teen leads. I don't know. Midnight Club.
Midnight Mass people liked.
But also there was some pushback against Midnight Mass. I did see some people who were like, it's boring or whatever.
And Midnight Mass, you can reasonably claim it as boring. I really liked it, but he was deliberately slow on that.
Yeah, I definitely like his pacing, but again, he kind of does have a certain style. Blind Manor was slow as well.
Yeah.
I found it pretty consistently compelling. But maybe it'll cause him to shake things up a little bit. At least, maybe. Try some new things out, try some new storytelling ideas. Who knows?
I was hoping for more Midnight Club because it definitely, like, the books, I guess there's lots of books and they...
I thought there was just one book.
I thought there was more than one book.
I was under the impression it was just one book.
Yeah, I think there's just one.
Well, they definitely didn't, they definitely did not finish it. By the end, they did a big... cliffhanger.
Well, I think the book
Club.
Is only like 120 pages.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Right. So he was doing an expansion on.
Yeah,
that would make sense. Right. He will take like a, the original novel of what's the first thing he did? Haunting of Hill House. Is that the name of the book too?
Yeah, I believe so.
But I know it was like, it was not a sprawling ensemble cast kind of thing. It was like about three characters or something like that. And he made it his own.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a good way. He took the concept and he found something really, his own story to tell with it. And, what was my point in mentioning that?
Expanding the Midnight Club book.
Yeah. I guess that's like, that is what he does.
Yeah.
That's kind of his thing. So here's my question. Is it now not even worth bothering with Midnight Club knowing that it doesn't have an ending?
No, it has an ending.
It has an ending, but it's a cliffhanger.
There's an ending and then there's the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I like Midnight Club. I
sometimes don't mind an open-ended cliffhanger if it doesn't get resolved, if it feels like, the adventures continue or whatever.
I think the stories of these kids, they got finished.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
There is a open-ended question about the place.
Yeah.
Okay.
The nature of whether or not the supernatural is really involved.
But ultimately it was a good character study for these kids
I liked it.
Dealing with something that I don't think gets seen a lot in movies.
I'm a little sad not to get more of it because I liked it. But it is of the stuff he's done in Netflix, it was my least favorite. And so if he goes to Prime and does something else better, I'm okay with that. Prime has made a lot of forgettable TV, and that worries me.
Here's a quick question, just obviously very hypothetical, but like, say he does a project or two for Prime, things are going well, could he ever revisit Midnight Club if he wanted to?
No, Netflix has it.
So. But are they just going to hold on to that license and give it to somebody else?
No, they're going to hold on to it so nobody else makes it because it's Hollywood and you don't want someone else to succeed with your ideas.
I guess at a certain point I would assume that they'd be willing to sell something if they're not capitalizing on it. They can make some money with it.
Maybe. I don't know.
Netflix,
I don't see
but I don't know how that all works.
I mean, they've released Glass Onion for a week in theaters.
Yeah.
Just for some weird reason.
There's a whole bunch of weird finance. I've read a bunch of articles on the
weird
financing that makes that make sense for them.
Yeah.
It's all promo. It's weird.
It is. It's very strange.
Yeah, it is very weird. Okay, let's talk trailers, because we got a bunch of them. I'm going to go in no particular order here, but I am going to close with the strongest trailer, of course.
Okay.
So let's start with the Super Mario Brothers trailer.
Right. This is the second trailer, and
full, like, kind of, like, we get to see the scope of things.
We do. I guess the story as it exists hasn't exactly been elucidated on, but, you know, Bowser's invading. He seems to be pulling some sort of scheme with Luigi, right?
I think he's captured Luigi to try to get Mario.
Right.
Yes.
You
know, we saw the first teaser that was about that Penguin Kingdom.
Yes.
I'm wondering if Luigi is, like, at the in the Penguin Kingdom, and that's why he's there.
Maybe so.
I want to say that Luigi is ghost hunting somewhere, and he gets caught.
Maybe he is.
It could be, but that also feels like the kind of thing that, like, they should introduce the notion that he ghost busts as a side gig and not just take for granted that he does. I want that to be
I bet they will.
Set up.
Because it looks like in this they encompass most of the games of the Mario world.
And that's the thing that's most notable about this trailer is that you will see at least mentions of... there's an obstacle course in it that Mario goes through that looks very fun and looks like classic Mario side-scroller Super Mario Brothers adventures. Mm-hmm. There is Mario Kart.
There's Mario Kart. Looks like there's Mario Party.
What's Mario Party?
Would you mention something while you're...
Well, I know that Mario Galaxy, which was just like the latest 3D iteration of him at a time that had some sci-fi elements in it. And I don't know that they'll mess with it much, but Peach specifically says, Peach voiced by Anya Taylor-Joy, says it's like it's a world, it's a big galaxy out there, or there's lots of galaxies or something.
Yep.
So there's clearly a nod to it.
And they also do Super Smash Brothers.
And Super Smash Brothers, yes, this trailer roughly begins, not quite with it, but with a crowd watching as Donkey Kong fights Mario. And they race at each other, and Donkey Kong grabs him, pins him, and just proceeds to wallop him over and over.
Yep.
In a very kind of comical, Pixar-ish way. It's very fun.
The animation looks stunning.
Yeah.
The voice work looks good. I don't care about Chris Pratt playing Mario. I think it's fine.
Whatever.
I think that the... I understand, and I would count myself among those who, like, Chris Pratt, the sort of personal life side of him, and maybe just who he is as a person... Not really my thing.
Right.
But, like, he's also not, I think, a monster. Right. And I think the people who are like, he doesn't sound like the Nintendo 64 high-pitched Mario. And I'm like, he's going to bring, a celebrity sort of A-game. He's talented enough, for sure.
He does do the little thing at the end of the trailer.
He does Mario's the little yippee like, thing. Yippee! Yeah, as he's in the car. I'm like... The notion that some people seem to have that the movie should be made up of like the catchphrases, which is really all Mario's character exists on in the games, not a great. There's a reason these guys aren't making movies.
I also saw him flying in his fursuit.
Yes,
he had his Tanuki suit. Yes. Anyway, there's a lot of funny scenes in this, and let's see. I like Anya Taylor-Joy voicing Peach.
It is hilarious, the star-studded cast for a Super Mario movie,
right? Not the kind of thing. Although games make so much money now, it does make sense. But it is wild.
I want all these actors and actresses to have played all the Mario games in order to.
I saw somebody posting Anya Taylor-Joy or something.
I saw that Anya Taylor-Joy wasn't a video game player until she voiced Peach, and now she plays video games constantly.
are both y'all planning to see this movie?
I probably will. Kaylee loves Mario Brothers, so it's
Like just from what I've seen that it looks like it has a certain level of quality. And I'm a pretty casual Mario player. Like I feel like the number of games I've bought is like 3 or 4 over the decades.
I've probably a little more than that. I will actually though say I have never beaten a Mario Brothers game.
I haven't either, except for the original Super Mario Brothers.
I've never beat the original Mario Brothers.
This all looks cute to me. I don't have any Mario fondness. I've never played Mario Kart. I've never played Mario Party. I've never played Mario
Kart. How you feel about Italians, Randy?
Mario Kart is an addictive little game.
Mario Kart is very fun. That's the one you should play.
My 15-year-old does play. He's got a Nintendo Switch, and he plays some of these. I don't know that he's going to want to see it. That's why I saw the Sonic 2.
Yeah.
So if I see Mario, the Mario movie, it will probably be because of Aaron... and I'm sure I will enjoy it more than I enjoyed Sonic 2.
I was going to say, I feel like this is like going to be head and shoulders
yeah.
above
yeah,
that.
It looks
no, what's going to happen, Randy, is Nick and I are going to go see it, and you'll get FOMO, and you'll come join us.
Maybe so. It'll be like Fast and the Furious.
Yep.
So it'll be when Super Mario 6 comes out, I'll see it.
It'll be like a trio of Mario, Luigi, and of course you as Waluigi.
I just thought it would be Toad. as voiced by Keegan-Michael Key, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
I will also say that I got very excited because I saw a pack of Yoshis. And I love Yoshis. Yoshis are amazing.
Oh, yeah. The thing where the obstacle course stuff looks fun, I saw, what do they call, I forget what they call the fish, or like bloopers?
Oh, yeah,
like
that attaches to his face.
Yeah, like he's going through the training course and like he's like just starting it and one of them just leaps up and just like bites his head and just attaches. There's a lot of good visual humor in there, and again, a ton of callbacks, so.
Going from Super Mario to the next, we have The Last of Us.
a similarly wacky game series.
Yeah, video games really just making it up there.
So happy to very sad.
Randy, they're both video games.
You jokingly said, is this just The Mandalorian with a different license or whatever?
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like it because Pedro Pascal and
getting a sassy kid
is carrying a sassy kid across the United States or whatever.
But I think he's playing more grumpy man because that
he
was
is.
His
he said some
portrayal.
Grumpy things in it.
Well, that
some
was his portrayal in the video game.
Morose.
He was not a happy because in the very beginning of the game, like bad things happen to him, like
mm-hmm.
basically,
like his family gets wiped out or something.
Yeah.
So watching this it's. I think, is this Paramount Plus? No,
this is
HBO. It's the guy to Chernobyl, and that is the thing that really must be interested in it. It looks expensive, it looks really good, but in watching this and watching the trailer, I'm like, is this just going to be Walking Dead with higher production values?
Maybe.
I watched the trailer, and I didn't have any real interest in it. I've been listening to, and we'll actually talk about later on, that podcast on Andor, and Andor is one where it's like, there's actually some like very strong writing and plot structuring throughout Andor. Like, it's like so much more than just a quick origin story or how he joined the rebellion or whatever. There's a lot to chew on, and I'm like, it is just possible that this could have some more stuff going on that they're going to be talking about.
Right.
But if all it's talking about is like survival and stuff, like what's the deal? The girl's immune to the zombie plague or something?
She is basically the cure for this plague that's ravaged.
And he's like, I gotta get her to blank where
well,
they
he's
can.
He's hired.
Okay.
He's hired to get her from basically plot A to, or
by
point A to point
underground
B.
Underground resistance group.
Yeah,
right?
And there are other factions.
But presumably so that they can, like, do something with her, like, make a cure, right?
Yeah, make a cure and disseminate it across.
This is a very simple plot structure. I don't know how you make it complicated.
Yeah. Well,
or nuanced or interesting or whatever.
Honestly, I think it's with world building. And I think you kind of focus in on sort of
like how
the collapse
how
of society.
People, the different like factions and stuff exist and all
but,
that.
But I mean, I found that to be very interesting in the video game where they basically where Pedro Pascal's character lives in this sort of like occupied territory,
okay.
How they've sort of
occupied by zombie peoples?
No, like they're like
the
keeping
humans,
away.
The humans are the real monsters in the apocalypse.
Oh.
No, that they've sort of gotten safe from these creatures, but out in the wild,
yeah.
You know, things can happen. And it's all going to be about spectacle, too. I mean, some of the, like, the kind of decayed areas and,
right,
like,
the overgrown
skyscrapers
cities and stuff.
That have
yeah,
toppled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I guess it's supposed to have been a little while since whatever
yeah.
apocalyptic
yeah.
thing happened then, like, decades? Hundreds
I,
of years?
I don't think you're wrong, Randy.
Takes a little
think,
while to grow that
yeah,
much stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is going to be sort of dark and...
A bummer would probably
a bummer,
be a fair way to put it. Like the
I
road.
Just, I mean, Chernobyl was a bummer, but it was really well done.
Right,
so
yeah.
I have a high hopes that...
This guy is going to be the master of the bummer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I realized that I don't know how much interest I have in, like, apocalypse anything.
I think, and here's to give them their possible due, because it does look like it's well-made at the very least. I think we all sort of felt the same way about Halo, and then Halo turned out to be pretty good. The Halo show.
Yeah, I did like Halo, and I'm hoping for it.
Yeah, so I guess this is one of those ones where I'll kind of be waiting to hear what people say about it. I do like apocalyptic stuff.
I used to. I guess I've just kind of gone off a lot of it.
Like, why? Because we had a pandemic and experienced
the
apocalypse.
I think that might be why. I honestly think the pandemic made me tired of...
Not as fun as we thought it would be.
No, no.
I don't like zombies, but I'll give this a shot.
Oh, these are plant zombies. They're different.
They make cool clicking sounds.
They make cool clicking sounds.
Oh, okay. Well, that's that is pretty different.
All right. The next four are all trailers that, to one extent or another, I really liked. The one... Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is, I think we would all... I don't know, Nick, or if you're in the same place with me and Dave, where you thought this may be a lackluster trailer for Guardians 3.
Yes, I agree. There are high points in it, though. There's some great lines of dialogue.
So some good bits. We were all, I think... I was, like, pretty high on Guardians stuff because the holiday special,
Was so good. But this is the first teaser. And so they really, like... What it's about, we don't know. It seems like it's to be about Rocket's origins.
It also has kind of a somber overtone.
It does. I mean, it's the last Guardians, and it's James Gunn's last ride at Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, he's going off to DC. This is his farewell to it all.
They're saying a lot of things in it that make it sound like a farewell. Peter Quill is like, he's like, we've been running our whole lives. You know, it's time to make a stand. Or Rocket's like, I'm tired of running. And Rocket's saying a lot of things that make it sound like he's going to get killed.
Right.
Or
it better not kill Rocket Raccoon.
I hope he becomes a pelt.
That Drax wears.
Yes.
But it seems like, looking at this, that somehow Adam Warlock is involved.
Yep.
And that it's the High Evolutionary, who's never called out by name yet. We only knew this from casting stuff.
High Evolutionary not being one of the best-known Marvel villains, but people who... Oh, mostly Fantastic Four and Avengers, I guess, is where he's most tended to turn up. But he's been around.
But if he created
it looks
Rocket...
like he may have created the world that created Rocket. Now... What is that world called? You guys, Half-World?
Half-World.
Yeah.
He may have created Half-World instead of Counter-Earth, which would make perfect sense.
Actually, he could still make Counter-Earth at some point.
He could still make Counter-Earth, but anyway, if High Evolutionary was basically the guy experimenting on animals, we know that Rocket's experience was torturous. This seems like we're going to see how he escaped. We see Lila, his otter girlfriend, which is a pretty cool deep cut. And it seems like maybe they're going back. They open up by going to what looks like an Earth-like planet that is filled with animal hybrids, and I'm wondering if that is... Half-World, basically. But the cool thing about that, we see them in the classic DNA costumes from the Guardians comics.
When you say DNA, even I don't quite... It
I
took
mean,
me a second.
Dan Abnett and... Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. Yeah, that's what his
they
DNA.
Were the, they were Dan, the Dan, writers Dan who kind of rethought the Guardians in the mid-2000s and more or less came up with a team as they were in the movies, even though there's a lot of changes even from their stuff. Yep. But they had a definite look... And that's those outfits that we're seeing in this third movie.
Yeah. Those look really cool.
What else do we see in it?
Gets to be Drax.
Drax gets to be Drax.
Some very pop-looking space suits were inspired by 2001.
Yeah.
We
see Gamora just in brief, so I assume they're going to tie up that thread.
Yep.
By the way, that thing where they show the High Evolutionary and who's the person who's walking in circles around the, like, presumably rotating space station?
Animal thing? Was it one of the animal
things? I think so. Probably one of his creations.
But that is also like a 2001 riff because they showed somebody sort of taking their exercise like that in a with the centrifugal force forming the gravity.
I do want to say, I'm hoping the CGI is not done, as usually the case, because I don't like their Adam Warlock that I saw. I didn't feel like he looked like Adam Warlock.
Yeah, there is something about Adam Warlock. Like a lot of Jim Starlin characters, he's kind of a classic, powerfully built... looking, you know, kind of warrior adventurer guy.
Yeah.
When we rewatched the trailer, the sun was glaring and I couldn't even see him at all. So I seem to remember thinking the same thing.
Well, it's like, it doesn't quite look right.
The actor is the guy from that Choose Your Own Adventure.
It's Will Poulter. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, but Choose Your Own Adventure Netflix Black Mirror episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
He was the one who was did design the program.
Yeah, he was the inventor.
That is an odd call for it.
I remember him from the We're the Millers, like the kid.
We're the Millers.
Either way, the stuff he's done before does not look like Adam Warlock to me. But
I mean,
you know, whatever.
I think what we should brace for is Adam Warlock is not going to be the Adam Warlock of the comics.
Yeah.
Well, I think he is going to be a creation of whatever
the Paragons, whatever they were,
and kind of sent for revenge. And I feel like he'll probably. Come to realize that,
Well, I don't know what the plot is, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
it seems like it's going to deal with Rocket's origin. I assume High Evolutionary is going to be back in action again, and that he'll be the threat.
Do we know what it is that they are tired of running from?
We don't know. We don't know.
Okay.
So, yeah,
maybe it's the High Evolutionary coming back to get his creation.
That's what I was thinking.
We get more Swole Groot,
but it's more Swole Groot.
Yeah.
But anyway, It looks fun. It's Guardians. Like both Guardians movies. I like the holiday special. I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's not like there's really a question of whether or not I'm going to see this.
It was just a bit of a lackluster teaser.
Yep.
Then we got the trailer and the title, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Stupid title.
I like the title.
Really?
The title is dumb.
Dial is not a cool word.
That's fair.
If it was like the sundial or something that sounded more old world, a dial sounds like something I set because my microwave timer isn't working.
Do you think it's better or worse than the Crystal Skull?
Crystal Skull sounds cooler. All
right.
Obviously,
yeah, I hate to agree.
Just
with
an
that.
Utterly awful movie, but it's a decent title. Right. Yeah, you could have made a cool movie about some weird ass aliens and Russians and
probably.
Stuff.
Probably they just didn't.
So in this movie, this is one of those teasers that doesn't really give us much plot.
Nope.
But there's a you know neat scene with Sala where he's kind of reflecting on the old adventures and his times, and so we see John Rhys-Davies as Sala again. And Indiana Jones is like, you know, Harrison Ford looking his actual age is
although
like...
Although they did de-age him in some of the sequences.
Right, but in this one, he's like, those days are over, Sala, and he's like, maybe not, my friend. Yeah. And then there's a bunch of flash cuts of, oh, I don't know, parades, riding horses in the subway, punching people, gangsters, I think?
I think so.
I think they're straight up mobsters. Yeah.
The set pieces in this teaser made me think it looks like they're getting the fun. I didn't see giant ants.
Yeah,
I didn't see any dancing gophers.
Nope. I suspect at the very least they probably learned that lesson that people don't want some hokey ass CG.
Yeah.
Mutt's gone. Thank God.
Mutt is gone. But in his place, Phoebe Waller-Bridge playing his goddaughter.
Right.
And yep. I love her. She's great, and so I'm hoping that she... There's apparently a big kerfuffle online. People are like, she's just replacing Indiana Jones, and the director is out there saying, she's not replacing anyone, and I'm like, okay, he's old. It's time for him to be replaced. If Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to be his goddaughter...
Randy, only a swole bro can replace Indiana Jones. God, a woman... No woman could do it.
I want her to replace him. I want her to pick up the torch.
Honestly, if Mutt had not been such a lame-o, that would have been the other time to replace him with somebody. And of course, though, as we all know, the person who should have replaced him is Short Round.
Yes, that's correct.
Would have been amazing. Mm-hmm. Could have brought back, what's his name, that actor whose name's going to escape me.
Ki-Hae Kwon?
Who's already, he's getting his renaissance now because Everything Everywhere All at Once and other things he's doing now, too. I'm still hopeful that if this, somehow this franchise persists, that he gets another
spot. That would be cool.
Spot. But there are several glimpses, like you mentioned, Randy, that of a de-aged Indy in past shots. And they do the thing that Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, I would say, famously failed to do, which is to say, it's all well and good to get young Robert De Niro's face attached to somebody, but if you're still using as like the body model him, that guy moves like an old dude.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, why is a guy who looks like he's 25 moving like an old dude?
Yep.
And it's not good. This is pretty top tier CG. It looks exactly like Harrison Ford did in his prime, and I don't know how it will at any length. They don't show a ton of, like, obviously old Harrison Ford is not doing, they don't show a ton of stunts with him. He punches a few people, I think.
Yep.
I'm hoping they're not going to try and make us think that he's much more of a fighter than an 80-year-old dude would be.
Well, they did show him trying to use his whip, and it doesn't go so well, and a nice homage back to one of the most famous Raiders sequences.
Yep.
I mean, for 80 years old, he looks really good.
Sure. It's just that, like, you would think one good punch from anybody who's not 80 would stop him. anyway, that said, better trailer, I think, than we would all expect. That right?
Yeah. I thought it was a good trailer.
Randy, would you agree?
Yes, I enjoyed it.
It's a pretty solid trailer. I went from, like, there is no chance I will ever watch another Indiana Jones movie to, let's see what the reviews say.
Yeah.
It made me watch all the other Indiana Jones movies again, so...
Did you?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just
even
like,
the fourth one?
No, God, no. I don't know what you're talking about.
Not all of them, then,
He
Nick.
Meant the real movies.
Did you go back and watch the Young Indiana Jones series?
No, but that was actually... I liked that series.
I liked it. I don't remember. I don't know if it would hold up for me.
Randy, do you remember the Indiana Jones sort of all-ages graphic novel that came out maybe about 15 years ago?
It was good.
It was super good, and it was like, oh, this is how is this so much better than the last movie?
Was that Chris Schweitzer, or am I conflating that with Pirates of the Caribbean.
It wasn't Chris Schweitzer.
Yeah, but
it was good stuff.
But there was an Elijah, I remember it. Yeah.
All right, what else we got?
All right, so there are two trailers here, both involving beasts, that I think we would argue are... One of these is the best trailer we watched this week.
And one is the second best trailer.
And one is the second best trailer. But which one is which? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Let's start with the one that I think I would probably put in second position just barely.
I think so.
And that is Transformers Beast Wars.
Well, I think it's called Rise of the Beasts.
Okay, whatever.
But everybody knows it's Transformers Beast Wars.
Yes.
Now, this we believe, I don't know how much we know this to be completely fact, is essentially a follow-up to the Bumblebee.
No, they've said as much.
Okay.
They've said
so this is not... And, you know, that Bumblebee itself kind of loosely, kind of could have tied in
it's,
with...
It's in continuity with the other Transformers
with Michael
movies.
Bay's crapola movies.
Yeah.
But the clever thing they did with Bumblebee was straight up just set it in the past. It's like in the 80s when the Transformers first showed up.
Yep.
Anybody who's watched it knows it's a pretty fun movie that avoids all of his Michael Bay's excesses and military fetishisms and... creepy sexual stuff with whoever
Megan Fox.
Fox, yeah.
But it's instead just a great, like, coming of age Iron Giant-ish movie with Hayley Stanfield and
really good 80s soundtrack. Yes, Iron Giant is a good.
And some awesome action sequences on Cybertron.
And some funny lines, like they're called, literally called Decepticons, guys.
Maybe
it's John Cena.
Yeah,
they look great. They got away from the weird. What robot is that look that the Bay brought in?
Is this a period piece as well?
Yeah, it's set in the like late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, so it's not super. They don't play that up super big in the ad in the trailers,
except
like where you're like
a Biggie song.
That is true. That is true. But I thought that was just for style. But you're right. If they're set in early 90s,
Bumblebee only plays what's on the radio. So
it's true.
That would be.
Did he not get to talk even by the end of that?
No,
he was damaged. He can't talk.
Yeah, a Decepticon essentially cut his throat.
Yeah, but it was, I think it was Blitzwing.
I would feel like you could repair that. I don't know that I need to see the movie, I would kind of like them to go ahead and take him away from being a Iron Giant mute, sort of.
I agree, but I think at this point they've kind of said, well, they are a little bit handcuffed by the continuity, I think, that Bumblebee did not talk.
Right.
In the Michael Bay, and they're trying to stay as true to that as they can.
Because they did a good job of it in the Bumblebee movie, I'm okay with Movieverse, Transformers movie continuity having that as
Or Texas
Bumblebee.
Christian University.
But we see two new notable Autobots.
Yes.
We've got
Mirage.
That
Mirage sequence is fantastic.
He's clearly going to like, you know, in the same way that Quicksilver kind of stole the scenes in that X-Men First Class one.
Yeah.
He is clearly Mirage is going to be doing some of that.
What was Mirage's portrayal in the cartoons and comics? He's kind of an erudite hunter.
I don't remember.
Kind of an asshole. I think.
Yeah, that was at least how he was. I think supposed to be written up.
Yeah.
Was a little bit of an elite.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I have no idea if that'll be the movie persona.
He gets to take out some cops using his power.
Yeah,
it was pretty awesome.
Cops. He does some cool illusion stuff and make him crashy crash. And then there's beasts. There's also beasts.
And there's Optimus Primal.
Yes.
And Nick was naming all of them as the trailer goes on, and I'm like, yep, that could be what that is. I've never read.
Well, a lot of them are shown so quickly that the only one you really see is the big ape guy, Optimus Primal. Everybody else is glimpsed in like microsecond bursts.
There is a rhino guy. I saw the rhino guy.
Very quickly, yes. It's like very quickly glimpsed.
And there's some kind of eagle-y guy or something.
Air Razor.
Yeah. Sure.
And there's Cheetor.
Cheetor.
Who I'm really looking forward to like seeing. I hope they give him something of the persona of the show where he is, I feel like he's kind of like the exuberant like 18-year-old kind of doofus.
Yeah.
Which is how, like he is kind of a badass. But he's also a little bit of a showboater.
I mean, he's Hot Rod.
Troublemaker, yeah.
There's also RC.
Yep.
Has she been in the movies? Oh, I didn't get... I mean, I only saw the first Bay movie, so...
Not this version.
I thought she had shown eventually.
Like, I guess maybe, like, in a...
You know, when King Arthur started showing up in, like, the later ones. Anyway, she has a badass scene where she's hanging onto the back of, like, an old VW van, or onto the side, rather... she's kind of got her, like, rollerblade mode sort of thing activated. And I think she's got some kind of, like, laser rifle or something that she's blasting
while they're like, it's like they're on like a mountain road or something like that. I feel like there's kind of like steep edges. I'm not 100% sure about that.
Right, no.
But anyway, yeah, you know when people like skateboard like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future and hang off the back of stuff? It's got that vibe, except she's like pew-pew-pewing and dodging lasers and stuff while she's hanging onto the side of this van and rollerblading,
it's
basically.
Super cool.
And it looks dope. I actually think it's like the coolest visual in the whole trailer.
Yes.
You know, I didn't used to be, of course, a Beast Wars fan. That was 90s stuff, and I was an 80s kid. But I watched the first season of it during the pandemic, just as one of those things to watch in the downtime. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? I like the Beast Wars. It is cool, and it has a really fun cast of characters. So I am fine. You know, I used to think it just doesn't make sense. Why do robots turn into something with fur?
Okay, so. I have to...
But now I know they're cool.
I just looked up the cast, and I have to tell some of these voice actors.
Oh, by all means, yeah.
So, Optimus Primal, Ron Perlman.
Oh, nice. That's fantastic. He's always been part beast.
Pete Davidson is playing Mirage.
Pete Davidson probably should have been Cheetor.
Oh, that's amazing. Pete Davidson playing Mirage.
Peter Dinklage is playing Scourge.
Scourge. Who's Scourge?
He's going to be the big villain.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Isn't Scourge one of the, like,
he's like a
Unicron?
Jet.
Yeah, he's I forget which one he is.
Super high-tech jet.
That's interesting to do that way. I wouldn't have...
Michelle Yao is playing Air Razor.
Okay, yeah.
Which is awesome.
Okay, all right.
I think those are all the big ones that I recognize.
Anybody notable playing Cheetor, Nick?
I don't see him listed on this, just straight up. Let me see.
You know what that means? It's Chris Pratt again. It's me, Cheetor. Of course, I will be awaiting my favorite of the Beast Wars of the, what do they call them? The Maximals, is Tigatron. Tigatron is
sure.
The best of them, but I can understand you might want to hold out on the best for a sequel.
Oh, it looks like I didn't see him in the trailer, but Wheeljack is going to be in there somewhere.
Okay,
which I love.
Wheeljack is a super good character who was, I feel like, lame in whatever version they did in Michael Bay's version.
I don't think he was used to Michael Bay's.
No, okay, maybe it was just lame that they didn't have.
I don't know. Some good voice casting.
He's the kind of goofy mad scientist of the Autobots. He's a good one. He's a great catalyst to have around for plot points. Anyway, it looks fun. It's a high-energy trailer with one weird omission, which is to say they're talking about there's a threat coming to Earth. It's kind of, it's soon. No clue as to what it is, other than I kind of know behind the scenes that Scourge and some of those dudes.
So the guy playing Noah, the lead, like, human in there, is Anthony Ramos from the... Oh, man. It was on...
Name sounds familiar.
In the Heights. The lead from In the Heights.
Okay, all right, okay.
And Hamilton, and you know.
And now he will work with the Beast Wars.
Yes. And this is directed by the guy who did Creed 2, so... I don't know. I have high
I never saw that, but,
song.
You know, I think because I was, like, Ryan Coogler did the original Creed, and I was so into it. I really liked that movie.
Still haven't watched it.
That I'm nervous that the follow-up could, with another director, could have been anywhere near as good.
Yeah.
But I mostly heard good stuff about Creed 2. And I have to admit, when I saw the trailer for Creed 3, I was like... Not bad looking. So yeah, I'm interested. All right, on to the final beast.
The best beast. The best trailer we've watched, probably. Cocaine Bear.
No, we're not pranking you. This is an actual thing.
So this is a thing that really happened.
Yes,
I forget where, but basically these drug dealers threw cocaine. They were being. Were they losing? I don't know if they were losing.
Did they say Kentucky or something?
It might have
like
been Kentucky. That's about right.
I didn't know this was a real.
It's
thing.
Like they must.
It's a real story.
That's why I'm worried that this ends with the. I mean, this is. I'm sure I could look it up right now. The bear will die in the end, but maybe he gets loose. I don't know.
Maybe.
But essentially, like it looks like somebody, like some drug dealers, dumped their cocaine out of like a plane that they were smuggling it in. Probably when they were being, you know, like law enforcement was chasing them. It lands in a forest. A bear inhales, like, the whole brick of cocaine and goes on a rampage.
So this is in 1985.
Oh, wow.
And
that was the peak
bear
of cocaine.
Ingested a duffel bag full of cocaine.
Okay, don't tell me what happens in the end.
I won't, I don't know.
Even if it's right in front of you.
It's Georgia, is where it is.
Georgia.
Mountains of Georgia.
The trailer is ludicrous and absurd.
It plays it as, for sure, like... I'm not even going to quite say dark comedy. It's just like a comedy. They amazingly score it with the song White Lines,
yeah.
which is a fantastic song for to score any trailer to.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bunch of people out in the woods, and they're like, they'll like spot the bear, like, you know, either like, it'll like, the bear like sneeze and like cocaine will come out of its nose, yep. and they're yep. like, he's like, he looks different. And this bear, you know, it's CG, but it's pretty good CG, and it's probably going to get tightened up even more for the final thing,
yep.
is doing crazy stuff. Sometimes he's, like, kind of goofy high. Sometimes he's, like, exploding through doors and clearly killing people.
Bears don't yep. climb trees.
There's somebody who believes they're safe because they're in a tree.
Yep.
And they're like, the other person is immediately like, of course they climb trees. It culminates in a sequence of somebody like racing off in a van or something like that.
I think it's an ambulance.
Yep. As the bear seems to go into turbo mode and chase at such a high speed that it like at the end it leaps and it looks like it's going to clear like this 15-foot leap into the back of the van or the ambulance.
You get a cocaine star. From Mario Brothers.
Yes, it feels exactly like that.
I want to talk about the cast of this. It's insane because this is like what I would equate like a Z sci-fi movie.
Right, it's like it is like Sharknado-ish kind of.
But I mean, this
gimmick
is
plot.
Like all the people from The Americans, so Kerry Russell and Michael Reese. It has yep. Margot Martindale,
yep.
O'Shea Jackson.
Yep.
Isaiah Whitlock Jr., who's
and it's Elizabeth Banks is directing it.
Is it Elizabeth Banks?
Elizabeth Banks directing
and
it.
And also, this is going to be Ray Liotta's last film that he
yeah,
did.
Ray Liotta's in this, and he died, and this is his last film as Cocaine Bear.
I mean, if you're going to, I guess, go out big?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This since the other movie I most equate Ray Liotta with is, of course, Goodfellas, which has many scenes of him high on cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
It somehow feels like a yeah. Full circle.
I am sure that was on purpose. Like
yeah.
that was a meta joke. Yeah.
This looks bonkers, and I will watch it.
The trailer's great.
Randy, I would like to see somebody splice these together. One of those scenes where he's like, Karen, what did you do with that coke? Or whatever from Goodfellas, and smash cut to this bear leaping onto an ambulance.
Taking a line of coke off of a severed leg.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of really yeah. ridiculous and kind of, it's clearly going to be probably like a gory and dark and funny movie.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like fun.
I don't know
it
if does. I'll rush to the theaters on this one.
Yeah, although it could be one of those where, like, if the reviews sort of say it's, like, it is just, like, an amazing, like, bonkers time and everybody, and, yeah. like, it is a fun theater movie, which I could see.
Yeah, I could.
Then maybe. But, yeah, like, it does otherwise feel like one you might wait to get home for. But
yeah.
But it's a great trailer. Everybody should go watch the trailer
yeah.
and
sure.
see what they think.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about this mega stuff week of comics. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 7th, and it is a giant week of comics.
Yep.
For both trades and single issues.
Are there a lot of trades?
There's a lot of good ones.
Okay, all right. We're going to start weirdly with number twos, because while there are some good new number ones and everything, I think the book that we all really loved this week is the book that you guys loved and I wasn't sure about, but now I'm on board. That is Fantastic Four number 2.
We were right. You were
yeah.
wrong.
You're right.
By Ryan North, Northwest.
Ryan North Week. Yeah.
We're going to call it Northwest Passage,
yeah.
Weeks.
It's not Tom Taylor Tuesday. It's a Northwest Passage.
Yes.
Because he has two books, which are the two we're going to talk about first. One is Fantastic Four number 2, where the first one was about Alicia and the Thing. This is about Reed and Sue
yep.
and their own little adventure.
Yeah, and it's told in the form of a letter from Sue to her best friend, or one of her
good
best
friend.
Besties,
yes.
Jen Walters,
yep.
a.k.a. She-Hulk, which felt very right. People, longtime FF fans, know She-Hulk, of course, spent at least a few years with the FF, replacing the Thing. And much like the first one, this is a very character-centric kind of sci-fi story, the kind of thing that I felt like is almost like a sort of Doctor Who sort of premise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The kind of thing that, you know, oh, what's going on in this strange small town where I think we can maybe say without revealing too much just the strange thing that seems to be a part of it, what kind of robots they are. I think
we can
say that,
right?
It's
on the cover if you look
yeah.
at it.
They, Reed and Sue are, I don't know, passing through some small town or whatever
yep.
and essentially are set upon by Doombots. And there is a strange story behind them. It is a very sci-fi-ish kind of standalone story that has a... And actually, like, it's a mystery. They both get to do cool stuff. The things that they do bring out who they are, and Sue's letter to She-Hulk kind of brings out some stuff about Reed Richards. You know, Randy, just a few days prior to this, we'd been talking about, or maybe a week or two prior, the FF can be a difficult thing to write because yes. They're a throwback to, like, sort of 60s heroes, 60s mm-hmm, hot mm-hmm. rodders, and 60s kind of tough guys like Ben Grimm, like, you know, that is to say, you know, he's almost more like a 50s tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan North, in doing this, he is not reinventing the wheel. He is kind of writing unusual stories about them.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the Reed who sometimes, you know, is the, like, oh, I'm detached and clinical, and I sometimes forget to be a decent father to my family and that kind of thing. All he's sort of done as far as... I feel like he's doing some good repair work on that, and he's not retconning anything. He's just kind of re-envisioning how that... re-lensing that. It's almost a little bit more like... Reed is like neurodivergent in a way, and has some really high quality, some really great qualities, and is kind of, he and Sue are sort of both aware sometimes that he's not his deficiencies quite, but just what his quirks are, I guess I'd say. And I loved how the story was kind of clearly liked these people, like Sue and Reed, and likes watching them kind of solve a mystery in a cool and interesting way.
Yep. I compared it to, it's like, this is the kind of thing Kurt Busiek would have done at, like, it feels a little Astro City-esque in some
absolutely
ways.
Absolutely feels Astro City-esque. Yeah. Like, all Astro City readers should be reading this.
Yes,
run.
For sure. I really like this. I thought, it is a little weird that we're going to get a Fantastic Four, like, the opening arc is going to be about not the team together.
I think it's smart, though, because it allows you time to get back in the kind of their character's mindset.
If it was not so well written, I would say it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Like, the FF isn't together, they're not in costume, there's, you know, like, no overriding story arc, but the stories are so interesting and good, mm-hmm. and the characters are so dead on, that it's going to work in spite of being a crazy idea.
Yeah. It's one of those things...
Because otherwise, like, if you told me that I got to read 6 issues before the team gathers or something, I'd be like, fuck off.
I bet it's going to be 4 issues, and then the final issue, they will come together.
Maybe so. I mean, that certainly fit the model.
But the way, like, if someone had pitched this to me, I was like, there's no way I would have gone with this.
Yeah, that's kind of true. I think if I had seen his script, that's what might have given it the go-ahead. Oh, and maybe he also talked a good game. But I'm glad they did it, because... I haven't really had an FF I've enjoyed, like, really enjoyed, I don't know, 10, 15 years?
Yeah.
What about y'all? Have y'all liked any...
I liked, and I guess it might have been about 10 or 15 years, I liked the Hickman run for what it was.
Okay, that was like 10 years ago.
The followed, too, the Fraction stuff, when he did the Future Foundation and stuff like that, or was that Hickman?
That was Hickman.
Didn't Fraction follow up?
Fraction did the thing with Ant-Man and it was weird and I didn't like it very much.
Okay.
I couldn't get into Hickman's run, although I read occasional issues and there were bits and pieces I liked.
I really liked the Hickman run. Here's the thing. I don't think I ever finished it, and I do think that to some extent it had that sort of clinical coldness that Hickman sometimes brings to things.
Yeah.
Whereas this feels warm and family. And also,
I mean, remember that Hickman occasionally wrote some good scenes with the family.
We did mention...
I remember the scene with the bread crusts.
We didn't mention the art of Ibn Quello.
You know what it reminds me of a lot is who's the guy who did Ultimate Spider? Mark Bagley.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Mark Bagley.
A little bit sharper, I think, his artwork is strong.
Yeah, very, very, very solid storytelling. And by the way, I saw one of the pages you did, and the weird investigation thing Reed does at the end, which I want to say, it's a kind of creepy use of his powers that he realizes is kind of creepy, but it's also really cool. That was a dope scene.
Yeah.
And this had, like, there's a kind of thing that happens sometimes where it's like, there was probably, like, 2 or 3 things, plot points that happened near the end. And any one of them, I would have left satisfied if any one of those things had happened at the end. But then that's like, there's like a denouement, and then there's like, I think, one final scene too. Yeah. And I was like, every single one of them added something to it, so that, like, in the end, I was like, God, that was a great story.
Yeah. The other book that Ryan North wrote this week is Secret Invasion number 2, which continues. They're definitely taking a cue from the Secret Invasion trailers and what we're coming, which is going to be more international espionage instead of like big alien invasion.
Right.
More paranoia stuff.
Right. Is this not Skrulls attacking in warships? This is They're Among Us.
And Maria Hill is the lead.
Did you get a chance to read this?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did. I felt like it it utilizes some John Carpenter's The Thing a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There's an inspiration.
The test they come up with for Skrulls. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, you know what I like about that is, yes, it is clearly inspired by that. A lot of people have been inspired by The Thing. Usually they wear it almost a little too much on their sleeve.
Yeah.
I think that this, although very clearly inspired by it, mm-hmm. did a better job by just getting to the point and, like, it happens fast.
Yeah.
It's a tense sequence and something interesting happens. And it's like, I was like, that's a good scene. That's how you do an homage. Don't wear it so much on your sleeves you're like winking at the audience. Just do it and do it good.
Yeah, agreed. No, yeah. I thought it was a good one.
Yeah, I'm really liking this so far. And I think their version of Maria Hill is interesting. I like that their Skrulls are smart and dangerous.
Yes.
I like your Northwest Passage thing, but I'm going to call it Welcome to North.
All right, so we got a bunch of first issues. I think the big one everybody's curious about is Disney's Gargoyles.
Yep.
Returning from Dynamite with writing by Greg Weisman, the original show creator, who also does Young Justice,
mm-hmm.
did Spectacular Spider-Man. Yeah. He has one of the best animation
This guy writers. Absolutely has, like, the best action-adventure animation pedigree there is.
So, I think, did any of us watch all of Gargoyles in this room?
No.
But our staffer Serena did, and she really was looking forward to this. It is very much a heavy exposition. They're reintroducing all the characters, but they are picking up right from the end of the series and going on. Like, this is a continuation of the Gargoyle series. I think a lot of people have been looking for that.
I was just reading the opening, and it's a cool opening. The lady who's, like, their cop friend, whatever her name is, mm-hmm. she is, like, they're, like, in pursuit of some guys who, like, what, ripped off an ATM or something like that? And in an act of, like, kind of wild overkill, there's, like, a car chase going on. The gargoyles swoop down on them. And, like, a bunch of funny stuff happens. Whoever the little tiny gargoyle, the smaller gargoyle guy?
Brooklyn.
Whatever.
Brooklyn?
Like,
no.
One or two of them, like, swoop in and they pick up, they, like, grab the dudes and fly off with them. And then, like, but the little dude gets in the driver's seat and he's, like, takes over driving the car. Who's the lady gargoyle?
Demona.
Yeah,
Demona?
Yeah.
Yeah,
she's not in this, though, right? Because she's the bad guy.
There's somebody who swoops in and picks one of them, because one of the guys says something like, somebody says, what are you doing, dude?
Says, dude, and she's like, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I ain't a dude.
But I don't think it's Desdemona, because I thought she was the bad guy.
There could have been other, I don't know the lore, because I almost have seen none of it.
I think she's Angela. She's Goliath's daughter.
Oh, okay. Like I said, this is follow-up to the show, so whatever the show ended with, that's this continuity.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gargoyles fans should check it out. Duh.
Yeah.
And the art's really good, too.
Yeah, it is. It's nice.
It is.
This starts the new X-Men Spider-Man crossover, Dark Web, comes out this week. Dark Web number 1. Art by Adam Kubert, writing by Zeb Wells, who's been doing Amazing Spider-Man. This is... the premise is a good one. It is Ben Reilly... jilted clone of Peter Parker, and Madeline Pryor, jilted clone of Jean Grey, getting together in limbo to launch a demonic invasion.
I want to be a jilted clone.
After Madeline Pryor was gifted limbo by
magic,
magic
in some book that we have not read.
Right. Which seems like a great idea, Ileana.
But yeah, it is basically, this is Inferno Redux. They're going to do the Inferno story again and bring demons in.
Did you guys enjoy the original Inferno?
I did not read. No.
It was just after when I had kind of stopped reading X-Men at the time.
I enjoyed it. It's a weird one.
What's cool about it? We're just.
I mean, all the demons sort of infesting New York. I like the art. I can't remember who did the art.
You know, this is... That's one of those things where, like, an actual invasion of New York is kind of a big thing. Do other heroes show in it, or is it kind of the X-Men show still?
I believe some of the other heroes show up in it, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh.
Yeah.
I can't 100% remember.
I think, is it currently in print? Is there a trade out there that has Inferno?
I think there is a flipping collection
or something.
Yeah. I might have to flip through that and sort of see what's up.
Yeah. Speaking of Spider-Man, there's a new Miles Morales Spider-Man number 1. This is by the writer from Spider-Punk, Cody Ziegler. Has a nice art from another one of their, what do they call them, Stormbreakers now?
Yeah, they're basically their up-and-comer artist, even though, as anybody who's followed those up-and-comer artists know, sometimes that means an artist who's been around 10 or 20 years, but for whatever reason is just kind of a little more in the spotlight.
That artist is Federico Vincentini. It's nice art. Miles goes up against the Scorpion, and then also up against a federal agent who, I guess they're enforcing the no young vigilantes thing that's still happening.
Sure.
Is that one of those that's still in there? So and yeah, it's classic Miles. It's got him, it's got his family, it's got Genki. He's back to his classic costume. If you're looking for more Miles, this is a new jumping on point for that. Moon Girl gets another first issue. This is Moon Girl and Double Dinosaur number one.
I really liked this one.
Really? The art's gorgeous.
The art's gorgeous. I like the sort of new status quo for her, that her parents know who she is, and kind of...
I made a sign for this, and it said that she forms a roller derby team of Inhumans.
Yep, she does. A roller derby team, yep.
And there's some other things going on in the background. I don't know. I thought this was just a real... It had some really unique ideas that I wasn't expecting, and I don't know who this writer is.
Yeah, I recognize the name. It's Ifueko, Jordan Ifueko.
Yeah, but I was very impressed with his skill.
I believe it's somebody from the YA world.
That makes sense.
In fact, when I was making the sign for this, I remember looking it up, and he's like a best-selling YA author. Like New York Times best-selling author, so...
Okay,
all right. Plus, a kid with a giant dinosaur is cool.
Well, I was going to say, the kind of funny thing is, like, for all of us, I think, who had been playing Marvel's Snap game, Del Dinosaur and Moon Girl have been kind of a little bit more on our radar because they are such a cool combo in the game. Yeah. They have a neat batch of powers, and they're fun to play. So I feel like, this is going out to the Marvel Snap people. We've occasionally been putting out some graphic novels spotlighting some of those heroes.
Yep.
But in particular, like, if you're feeling the vibe of those characters from that game, this would probably be a good one to try out.
I also like that they give her a little bit more character. I don't know if she's had this character development previous, but she's a little, like, a know-it-all and kind of, like, grates against a lot of people because she doesn't think she's better than anybody.
She literally is the third smartest person in the universe.
But,
right?
But I feel like she's got a little bit of Reed in her. That is kind of, like... not pits her against the rest of humanity, but definitely
that's why her only friend
is a
dinosaur.
That's true. That she's mind linked with somehow.
And I don't think that's an accident. I think they are trying to draw parallels between her and Reed to some extent.
It makes sense. But I really enjoyed it. What else we got?
All right, we got Thanos Death Notes, which is a one shot tying into the most recent
issue
Thor,
which came out this week as well.
Yes, which did come out. It's the start of a new storyline tying into Thanos. Basically, it's three stories I think in there.
Yeah, Thor has, I believe, has had a prophetic vision about the return of Thanos.
Yep.
And he's, like, actually, like, investigating. He's, like, at, like, some Death's Domain place. And he's, like, literally, like, kind of looking for, like, documents and files and things like that. But it sort of leads to these stories, I guess. And at least one of it, when I was flipping through, I haven't read it, was interesting. If anybody here has ever read, seen videos on, or seen viral stuff about the thought experiment called Rocko's Basilisk, that is presented here in a sort of Thanos version. And it's a kind of a weird and creepy thought experiment. If you've never looked it up, look up Rocko's Basilisk. It involves an AI in that version, but a Thanos in this one. And it's a pretty interesting rethink of the concept. Also, in a weird way, I sort of liked... Yes, I know, you know, we know Thanos is never going to, like, stay dead.
Right, right.
But I kind of like that, at least as a concept, that Thor is like, I know he's coming back, and I'm going to do some stuff to prepare this time.
By the way, that story is Christopher Cantwell, the guy who does, like, he's done a ton of stuff at Marvel.
Okay.
And he's writing the current Iron Man book, or was writing it.
Makes sense.
The third story that is about death and Thanos is written by J. Michael Straczynski.
Oh.
With art by Thor artist Jeff Shaw. So that's probably the big seller of this one.
That's wild. JMS has not written... He brought back Thor in, like, the mid-2000s, like, 15
to really well
years ago.
Beloved
he
run.
And even influenced the Thor movie and stuff like that.
Yep.
Like, it was a great run, but, like, he hasn't touched that character in a decade... Yeah. Plus, probably coming up on 2 decades.
Well, and Thor isn't in his story. It is just Thanos and Death.
Huh. Also, I wonder how did they get JMS to come out of...
The last
he's got his own comic company now.
The last story is by Kyle Starks, the guy from I Hate This Place, and has art by Ron Lim, who's sort of well-known for his Thanos stuff.
Yeah,
okay. He brought him back during the Silver Surfer. So it's got a pretty... And the first writer is Gronbeck, The guy who's doing the
Nordic
stuff
for guy.
Thor. Yeah.
And I will also say, the Thor 29 that comes out this week, this isn't Donny Cates. This is Torin Grumbach, who I was actually writing with Nick Klein on artwork, and it looks great.
Okay. Then we have Extreme X-Men number 1, or as Claremont would probably call it, Extreme X-Men number 46. Because this picks up right where Extreme X-Men left off, I don't know, 10 years ago, whenever it
was
ended.
Like, oh, yeah. More than that.
Like 15 years ago.
Was it that long? Yeah.
Because it was like 2001 or 2002 when it started.
Yeah.
For people who don't remember, you know, Chris Claremont, the godfather of the modern X-Men, you know, the guy who put it on the map. He had a book in the early 2000s called Extreme X-Men. It was right when New X-Men and a few others were going.
Dealt with the Destiny's Diaries.
Yeah, Destiny had this like this book of prophecies, and everybody was chasing it. And that was like the MacGuffin early on, but it kind of just became Claremont's X-Men book.
Yeah,
and I think we can all sort of be a little realistic and say Claremont might be not at his full peak writing prowess.
Yep.
But you know, like I always kind of wish him well. This was one of the last sort of times he still writes X-Men miniseries and projects from time to time. That was sort of his last sort of big run, and this is just a picking up on that sort of thing. It's got the artist Salvador LaRocca back on board.
Yep.
It's a good team. It's got a good design.
Fun. It's got good looks. This is straight up out of continuity, but it is. Claremont is bringing back Ogun, his like demon samurai that he used in the Kitty Pryde and
Wolverine series way back in the 80s. Yeah,
he's doing Wolverine and Gambit sort of sniping each other. This is very much Claremont is pretending nothing has happened since he finished writing X-Men, Extreme X-Men.
I think some of the people who were 90s X-Men kids, this is the kind of book that they would plug into.
100%. And it's a solid X-Men team book. If you're not liking the Wilder...
Hickman era, Krakoa era of X-Men, might be one to check out.
Yeah. Radiant Pink launches is another in the Massive Verse. This is...
Everybody knows Radiant Black has been a kind of really huge success. A lot of times I've sort of recommended it to people who like Invincible.
Yeah.
And I still would do that.
Radiant Pink is a streamer. So she's pretending to she's using her friend to help her, or her friend or her sister, I think, to basically stream her, so it looks like she's teaming up with her own superheroic alter identity.
Right.
And then her Radiant Pink can like teleport. And she's basically increasing her streams while also doing, like, she is a...
She does, like, some charitable stuff.
She's a queer girl of color. She is trying to... She says her goal is to, like, help people who look like us. I think she's got, like, a foster mom. She might be, like, a foster system. But it's really interesting. And then the setup at the end, she sort of rescues Meet Cute with this woman who's, like, a EMT, I think. And things go wrong, and they have an interesting premise set up. So,
okay.
I like this first issue quite a bit, even as I have... I really enjoy the Radiant Black series, but I've decided I really like reading it more in trade, where I get a big chunk of story.
Yeah.
Speaking of,
there is a Radiant Red gets collected. Radiant Red is sort of the bad guy. She's one of the bad guys of this world.
We don't know, like, I guess they basically, people have been getting, what, super suits that are alien origin?
Yes.
And they give you powers. They have
Sentai-ish.
Yeah.
Right, right. Like
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in there, yeah.
Absolutely that influence, but it's also, like, the Power Rangers are not superheroes in the traditional sense. They are Sentai heroes, and these are more like people with superhero powers, not sort of Power Ranger type powers, but visually they do look like Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. And like, every book that has had one of these suits, Radiant Black, Radiant Red, Radiant Pink, has kind of followed the... that is very different things happen to different people who get these.
Yep.
One of them was kind of the Radiant Black is like broadly the first sort of notable hero. His enemy, Radiant Red, ended up getting her own comic, and she's like more of like a hero now too, or anti-hero.
It is almost a crime book.
We get to see her backstory and what put her in this spot.
Yeah.
Invincible fans should check these out.
Yeah.
And also, Nick, you mentioned, what was the other one that's like their magic one or something?
Rogue Sun is a separate thing, but it's in the same universe, and it's really good.
Speaking of magic.
Image has a book called Hexware, which is a cyberpunk witch robot thing, I think.
This is from Tim Seeley.
Tim Seeley.
Who, you know, you may know from Hack Slash, Grayson,
yep.
Whatever else. Oh, he also he did Money Shots, right? Recently.
Yeah, he does Money Shots.
That's one of his bigger ones. This is for Image, right?
Yep, combination of magic and cyberpunk. Basically.
Yeah, if you wanna see some witchy stuff in a cyberpunk era, that's one to check out.
So there's a lot of Rick and Morty. We don't tend to get off the shelf anymore. It seems like have settled. But
like there's like a saturation point.
There's a new one by Jim Zub, who does among other things the D&D comics, illustrated by Troy Little, who's been doing a bunch of stuff, called Rick and Morty versus Cthulhu. And this is what's funny is Rick is as always is like. He hates everything. Basically, he discovers Jerry reading a book. He's like, Jerry, you don't read books. And winds up taking the family on a time-traveling dimension adventure to kill Cthulhu, which takes him through Color Out of Space.
The actual stories?
Miskatonic University. I don't know who Wilbur Whatley is, but he's clearly from one of the other stories.
Yep.
They go to Dunwich. And he's snarking about it the whole time, but it's clear they're also being infected by the Cthulhu-itis.
I think Wilbur might be from the Dunwich horror, but not 100%, but I believe that.
He was clearly being infected by the Cthulhu stuff at the same time. So it's fun. It is a ton of references to Cthulhu stories.
Oh, that's cool.
I enjoyed this a lot.
I need to point that out to my Cthulhu nerd brother.
And then Dark Crisis Warzone came out this week. This is a one-shot that is basically three stories set in and around the Dark Crisis. There's Linda West? Yes, Wally West, or Iris West. Wally West's aunt and Barry's wife.
Yes.
And Linda West, who apparently has superpowers now, teaming up at the Hall of Justice against a villain invasion, which is a really fun little story.
You say teaming up with the Hall of Justice?
The Hall of Justice.
Hall of Justice.
The Justice League's headquarters.
Oh, okay. Did you say they're teaming up with it?
They're like teaming it's a up sentient? At
oh, okay. Hall of Justice. Got it.
No, the Hall of Justice becomes sentient.
You know, it's superhero comics. They can do that.
And then there's a Jim Corrigan story involving him maybe having to go back and get the Spectre who's been used by Pariah. And there's a Nubia story in here. And then a Green Lantern story with Guy Gardner and a character I can never remember from the Green Lantern book that came out. Tangent. What's the one that I'm thinking of?
Far Sector.
Oh yeah.
It's that character along with Guy Gardner and some other Green Lanterns. Yep. And then there's an introduction of a new character called Red Canary.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, a bunch of little one-shot stories set in and around the Dark Crisis stuff. Also worth mentioning, new issue of Daredevil, which is really good. New issue of Spider-Man. The final issue of Variants, the Jessica Jones story from Gail Simone and Phil Noto. The first trade of Jason Aaron and Jesus Saez is Punisher,
also the
King of Killers, also a new issue of that.
Punisher.
Issue 8, I believe, of that.
It's been a really good series so far.
It's a really good series. And Monstrous Volume 2 hardcover, we've been following that. They finally got a big cover of that.
I do know some of that. The Monstrous big hardcovers have done incredibly well for us.
Yeah.
I expect that some people will be very interested to have a new giant bite of that fantasy, dark fantasy series.
Anything else? Did I miss anything else?
No, I think you got it all.
Alright. So, big week for comics. Lots of good stuff. I think we all would point you to Ryan North. I think, unless if he falls on his face, he's the guy to follow right now.
Yep. Tom Taylor and Ryan North.
Jed McKay.
Those are the guys. All right, that'll take care of comics of the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about a podcast and some movies. All right, let's close out this segment of our podcast, or open this segment of our podcast, by talking about another podcast.
Whoa, we're going to fall into some sort of Ouroboros snake eating itself.
Yes.
It's a podcast Ouroboros.
Y'all were going to talk about a Star Wars podcast called A More Civilized Age.
Yep. By the way, that full title is A More Civilized Age, a Star Wars podcast.
Okay.
Because they're so
You know, Nick and I started, both tried out this podcast some months ago.
Yeah.
Because it was recommended by a former staffer, Colin, who is a big Star Wars fan, but he looks at Star Wars from a particular perspective that's, I'm going to say, is kind of a little bit, sort of the, he likes to do the realistic analysis of it. Jedi as a strange religious order propping up an ailing government.
Yeah.
You know, clones as, you know, abused and exploited soldiers. A kind of a real world look,
that Star Wars itself invited, I think, as far back as the prequels. They invited you to look at some more morally gray areas, wonder if the Jedi Council was being manipulated, to think about the bureaucracy of the galaxy. That's kind of what this podcast likes to talk about.
But originally it was a podcast specifically...
It's about the Clone Wars.
About the Clone Wars cartoon.
Right, because that's where they did the deepest dive in it.
Yep.
And where they've started sinking their teeth a little bit into more serious issues.
So they would do episodes that basically did a story arc, which was usually between 2 and 3 episodes.
Yep. And they like Clone Wars, and they're going to get around to Rebels. They did start out by talking about the prequels, which they largely eviscerated. And I should say, this is a group of about four people.
Yeah.
And I want to say, Nick, am I correct? I think they're sort of grad students. Or
I think
20-somethings anyway.
I feel like that's easy to say. I don't know if that's actually true.
Okay. I want to say that they sort of broadly feel like they come a little bit more from academia. This is not a what was your favorite scene kind of podcast. This is a podcast where they want to talk about power structures, socio-political analysis, and it, again, sounds a little weird for Star Wars, but they have invited it at least as far back as the clone or the prequel movies. And I honestly found them though a little, while very intelligent, they had some very interesting things to say. I was not completely sold on this podcast. No. It wasn't quite my thing.
Because they were basically doing the whole real world to a kid's cartoon show.
Right.
And
they could never look at the Jedi as just, heroes, right?
Right.
Jedi always had to be, tools of the power structure, along the way, I think they had good points to make. It's just that that's just not how I usually care to lens Star Wars, which will bring me to Andor. Nick, you told me that they...
I don't know.
It's a motorcycle.
You guys may not know this, but whenever Dave starts talking about Star Wars, a motorcycle sound starts.
Yes, the bikers that I used to run with don't like me talking about it. They're like, they think it's nerding me out too much, and they're like, we want biker Dave.
By the way, this will be hilarious if you can't actually hear that motorcycle. We heard it quite loudly in the office.
Yes.
But if you don't hear any audio, there was a motorcycle sound.
He just gunned his engine.
That was someone just playing a Ghost Rider card in
So Nick, you told me that you had fallen off of it as well some months ago, but you went back when they started covering Andor, and I was like, well, you know what, Andor does seem like everything they ever wanted.
Well, I saw that they had covered Andor, and this was the day of the finale air.
Okay.
So I watched, or I started listening to the one prior, so the second to last episode.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, they'll probably be like they were for Clone Wars and hemming and hawing a little bit.
Right, a little bit of a kind of a very cynical perspective.
I wasn't even thinking about it, that Andor is almost like tailor-made for this group of people.
And they, you discovered what I have, because I've now listened to about half of their podcasts on it. These are not short podcasts. They podcast for an hour and a half to 2 hours per episode.
Sometimes three.
Yeah. it turns out they're extremely excited for Andor.
And it was like a shock to the system when I was listening to
hear them be so positive.
And I was like, oh my god, these people are being so positive. I've never heard them with so much glee in their voice.
Yes.
But I will say, when they're talking about Andor and sort of its meticulousness and all this, they are very smart about their critiques, and they're kind of delving into what the show is exploring. They are super knowledgeable about what they know.
This is why I want to bring it up, and I want to recommend the podcast, but specifically I'm going to recommend the Andor episodes, which incidentally, they were planning to cover all of Clone Wars, then all of Rebels, and then get to Andor after that, or do little stuff for their Patreons and stuff like that, people. But they saw the first episode or two of Andor, and they're like, guys, we have to change everything about our schedule and throw everything upside down, because this is the podcast we need to cover.
Yeah.
Or this is the show. So, for example, when they're talking about Andor, one of the guys who's I feel like he's, got to be big history buff.
Is this Rob Zachney?
I don't know any of their names.
Okay. Rob Zachney is I think the
ringleader.
A lot of ways, or at least the guy who does all the scheduling.
So he'll do, because there's so much about early stages of rebellion and stuff in this, and also about fascism in Andor, he'll talk about how he'll liken it to Irish, the IRA, and other anti-imperialist pushbacks, including First Nations people uprisings and things like that. He will be able to find very specific incidents that an episode might, if not, you know, reflect, I guess I'd say. Right. Not like they're doing direct nods to it. You know, he pointed out in the episode where they pulled the heist that the biggest visual style of the natives of that planet, what's that planet called?
Aldani.
Was the biggest influence looked like Mongolian.
Yeah.
And because there's a history of Mongolians being oppressed by the Chinese government, he's like, I know, I don't think they're like trying to say these are Mongolians. But he is trying to have somewhere in your mind to register some of those things.
Yeah, I mean, they're visual cues. They're kind of like, and this, you should feel this way because of this element.
Right, right.
Kind of making you think a little bit.
But they also do, they'll do dialogue analysis and play like sometimes an extended scene and then talk about it, just because there's a lot of really interesting audio conversations.
I will also say that there are moments where they geek out, because they are Star Wars nerds.
Yeah.
One of them screams he's a Jedi because they think that Luthen Rail is a Jedi.
Yes.
No, he's not.
Right, but he does
have lightsabers.
Their particular
on his vehicle.
But and their particular reason, though, from what I understand, it really had something to do with a character who had the same. His last name is Rael. R-A-E-L. There's another Jedi apparently, Randy, named Rael somewhere in like the Clone Wars cartoons or something like that. Yeah. And there's enough ways. It's like you can imagine he's like human.
And he did have a stick, a walking stick, and had kind of like a nubby thing on the end that kind of looked like a saber.
Now, usually when they're doing that, they're kind of only half serious. They're not like, this is my theory, and I'm going to be upset if it's not the case. That's like their side sort of thing.
And I was just trying to reiterate that they're not a bunch of like, this is not like a history podcast that is like kind of dry.
And in fact, they're like joking around a whole lot. You know, who's the weasel twerp guy? The would-be fascist.
Yeah, Cyril Karn.
Cyril Karn, yeah. They hate him in the best way. They think that he is such a great image of, like, a Weasley would-be fascist. You know, a guy who really is into it. And so when he suffers, when his mom is being cruel to him, and when he's eating his bowl of cereal and so misanthropic, they love it and they're cackling with glee over his pain. And she's like, at one
point,
that should be
a litmus test, though. If you have any feelings for Cyril Karn that isn't utter hatred, I feel like you're on the wrong side of history.
You know, I can look at Cyril and say that like the forces that made him were like his mother is a terrible person on that show.
Yeah, but
he may have never had a chance.
Maybe.
All she ever instilled in him was a desire to, it was that he should be ambitious.
It's a good podcast.
It's a good podcast that's both smart and funny and all that stuff. I have been listening to it while I drive around and stuff like that. And normally, you know, it might be one of those cases where you think, I don't want to listen to a podcast about a show that's longer than the show itself. But I kind of, sometimes I think, why not? If you've got, like, you probably talked about a lot of things more than, like, an hour or two about the X-Men or Star Wars or Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever for a while in your life. If you've got interesting things to say about it, you've got interesting things to say.
I've listened to way too many podcasts about Andor, because I listened to, like, two or three other ones of other pop culture stuff that have focused on Andor as well. So.
I just don't think people should podcast about pop culture.
Sure.
Did Randy drag us into podcasts for the first time?
I believe I dragged all of you into
this.
Yes.
Was it with Comic Pants back in the day?
I believe it was with Comic Pants.
Had we done any other podcasts?
That was my first podcast.
Okay, interesting, yeah. And now, Randy, how many podcasts do you do regularly?
I'm on two.
This one and...
How many podcasts do you do regularly?
Two.
All right. So which one of us is the King Podcaster? Hard to say.
I guess I need to add a third one and claim the title. All right, but you've done more at times.
I have. Dave, how many podcasts have you done at times?
All right, sure.
I know you were doing TV.
I feel like Randy is the king. I feel like I have to give up the trophy.
I think
you
were doing like three or four at one point.
I was at one point doing multiple podcasts.
And you also did like a you did a whole focus one on like your favorite canceled show.
On Terriers, I did.
What a weirdo thing to do.
Yes.
What would be your one, like, revival show that you would do a podcast
if I had to do one on that? I don't know. Get back to me on this one.
You didn't watch much TV.
I don't watch that
Dave
much TV.
Dave could do a podcast on a like an obscure like comic book or something.
Yeah. Anyway, so this podcast is called A More Civilized Age, just to reiterate it. I do think, it's a well-done podcast no matter what, but in particular, if you liked Andor, these are great ones to check out for a deep dive into it and its influences, and to have some fun with some people who are just geeking the hell out about it.
They're Clone Wars episodes you may want to hit your head against the wall.
But the Clone Wars stuff, I figured, I haven't heard that many of them, but I thought that they would be more into its attempts to at least do deeper stuff.
But
maybe it's the later seasons.
Clone Wars is still a kid's cartoon, and they are very referential to, the actual, movies saying, I've got a bad feeling about this 90 million times, and there are things that grate on them, I think, to the point of them, groaning.
I guess this podcast is doing pretty well, though. They've got a Patreon, and they talk about all the other stuff.
And they were able to get all the Andor episodes early, which is fairly... they had an in.
Pulled some strings.
Yeah.
Dave, I have a pitch for you.
All right, hit me.
The Squadcast, a issue-by-issue podcast of the Suicide Squad.
Would absolutely do it.
All right. I do not listen to this podcast. I have not listened to it, but... Yep. I did watch several movies this week.
Okay, yes. What do we got?
So I watched Nobody, which I know Nick has seen.
Yeah.
Hitman movie, or is he what's his deal?
He is kind of an ex-military guy. It's adjacent to Hitman.
Yeah, it's
a special operative.
So basically.
It starts off, it's Bob Odenkirk.
Bob Odenkirk, yeah.
And there's a break and entering at his house. He's a dad, he's got a wife, and
kind of mopey.
Two kids? One kid?
One kid, I think.
One kid.
Kind of mopey, down on his luck.
Yeah.
A little just kind of, I don't know, sad.
And these guys broke into his house. His son grabs one of them and he's let him go.
Oh no, they have two kids because it's an older son and then a little daughter.
That's what I thought. And his wife and his son are both kind of like, why didn't you do anything about this? These people broke in, and then he discovers that these people who broke in, he lets them go. They got away with some minor stuff. They took his daughter's, bracelet or something.
It's her watch, I believe.
It's her watch.
It's like a little Hello Kitty watch or something akin to that.
So he decides to go back after him. And in going after him, we learn that this guy is, in fact, he is ex-military, but his wife is yes, you were in the military, but you were, an accountant.
Yeah, and basically, somebody who does, the counting armory and things like that.
Yeah.
Kind of just bland.
So he goes through, and then... he's, looking for his daughter. He goes to these people, he tracks them down because he wants to get his daughter's bracelet back.
Just to check, is there any world secret or military secret hidden in the bracelet?
No.
No.
It's literally just because it's her bracelet.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he's got one of those kind of, Parker-type motivations.
Yes. And then he sees a woman being accosted on the bus by some Russians.
Yep.
And he, decides, I hope these guys like hospital food. And he, beats them all down. Only to find out that one of them was the son of this mobster, this big Russian mobster.
Yeah.
And it becomes this thing of cat and mouse with him and this Russian mobster. Mm. It's very John Wick-esque.
Yes.
And we slowly start to learn that, this guy actually was... Being an accountant means something else. That's what it meant. And they reveal what that means. And he is a military badass who has this other life. There's a couple twists to that as well. My favorite thing about it, though, is that his dad, Christopher Lloyd, is in an old age home. And when the mobsters come for his dad turns out to be kind of a badass as well. Christopher Lloyd, and he's 10 minutes of screen time just steals the movie.
Yeah.
Nice. That sounds like a fun role for
him. It's super fun. It is
this is the Better Call Saul guy,
lead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he got beefed up and
he does.
He kicks people's ass.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I enjoyed this quite a bit.
I guess I feel like if you are an aging Hollywood actor, if you're 50s and up, There probably comes a time when you get an envelope that says, are you willing to go to the gym for the next 6 months and get your old man action hero credits?
Well, Stallone is currently playing the 75-year-old badass version of himself in Tulsa King, so...
Yeah.
I'll also say that Bob Odenkirk gets the shit kicked out of him.
He does,
too.
Does.
So it's not kind of
in the tradition of a pulp hero.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah,
completely.
That's good.
I also watched a couple of, I guess, noirish, maybe. I watched See How They Run. This is a one that came out this year. It is Sam Rockwell. It's set in England in the 1950s, I think. Basically, there's an Agatha Christie play, a famous one. I don't remember what the name of it is. And someone gets murdered. One of the actors gets murdered in there, and so Sam Rockwell is a police detective. He's got a female trainee who's assigned to him. He is a sexist, so he has no interest in this, but her superior is like, she's going to be the start of a new wave of like women in policing and that kind of thing.
Played by Saoirse Ronan.
And the two of them are investigating this murder, which is tied into this like Agatha Christie play. It's interesting. It's an interesting whodunit. There's some good like blind alleys and red herrings and that kind of thing. And it comes out to a it also has Adrian Brody,
okay,
because he is the producer who is trying to turn, or either producer or director is trying to turn this play into a movie, and some of the people do not want this, and he gets murdered early on.
Okay.
And that is the sort of the story, is trying to figure out who murdered him and why, and there's some other murders. It is a big murder mystery. It's nods to Agatha Christie.
Miniseries?
It's a movie.
Okay.
Just a movie. I really liked it. It's I was not like in love with it, but it's a very fun to watch.
I'm in like with this movie.
All right, yes. and the other one, which I felt similarly about, was Nightmare Alley, Guillermo del Toro's sort of noir, carnival noir.
Yep. I can't remember. I think I might have talked about it.
I think
it
you
a few
did talk
back.
About this, and I kind of like tried not to listen because I wanted to see it.
Yep.
But you really liked this, right?
I did. It was actually one of my favorite movies of the year.
Interesting.
Did you watch the black and white one, or did you watch the?
I watched the regular one.
Okay.
I don't do the black and white.
Who's the lead in it?
Bradley Cooper,
yeah. Right. Who's kind of like a little bit of a... is he a grifter?
Yeah. Grifter? Well, he's a drifter who gets dragged into their...
A drifter-grifter.
He's a drifter who becomes a grifter.
Oh.
Because he gets dragged into the circus and starts working for their mentalist, their fortune-teller woman.
Yeah.
And
he's
then,
kind of in good with several people at the circus, and they kind of knows how to... He sort of does back up on several bit acts and stuff.
And he sort of steals the bit from her and goes to decide to become a high society mentalist, kind of like that. Who's that fraud ghost guy?
Like the Warrens?
The modern guy. Uri Geller, right? Isn't Uri Geller the one who disproved things?
I mean, Uri Geller is a fraud too.
So maybe
he's a mentalist.
One of those guys who like gets up in front of a crowd and pretends to talk to your dead relatives.
Yeah.
And they do that bit. But then he's like, he's talking to this psychologist or psychiatrist played by Cate Blanchett.
Yep.
And there's sort of a romance thing going there, and he's sort of scamming. It's all about like this mentalist scamming people and scamming the rich person. And
there's one of the things I liked best in it was when they kind of showed how they would do cues and stuff for the readings, because they would get like information from certain people in the crowd. And then the person who was like the assistant to the magician would then like use certain phrases that would key them to that was kind of complex,
right?
But it was like you they show you exactly how they do it, so that the mentalist can then make these like weirdly accurate guesses and stuff and you know, psychic readings and stuff. But yeah, like you said, and so I liked seeing the nuts and bolts of how they do what they do.
Yeah.
And then there was also like this scary freak show side of the thing, which is really pretty grim because it seems pretty clear who plays it? Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe is the lead of the carnival. Yeah,
yeah, and they will like essentially roust some like desperate homeless person essentially and turn them into their gimp who will like eat like bite the head off a chicken kind of stuff.
They're geek.
They're geek, and it's shown with pretty grim realism. But Bradley Cooper is like sort of trying to escape that, and he's moving on to he's trying to get away from that grim side and get into the higher society grifting. Only that ends up presenting its own issues with Cate Blanchett, and then there's also a wealthy person who wants to contact the spirit of his dead wife.
Yes, because he did some things he's ashamed of. He wants to get absolution, basically.
Right, and they try and sort of, I guess I can only say, sort of stage these things and to bilk him out of his out of some money. But the guy's like right hand man or bodyguard or whatever is like watching him like a hawk.
Yep.
And there's a real question, like arguably they're doing pretty bad things, but this guy I think is maybe not a great person.
Yep.
And so you're like, oh, this kind of everybody is not great, and it's all, you know, you kind of want the heist to come off because it's a heist thing.
Yeah.
And it's real edge of your seat as to whether they can pull it off and whether or whether he's going to kind of fall into despair in this. There's a lot of psychological stuff going on, too. But, I think I just plugged into it for whatever reason. I like Circus Noir as a genre.
Circus Noir, yeah. You're always talking about how much you love the Circus of Crime.
No, actually, I was, like, surprised because I'm not usually the biggest Guillermo del Toro fan. And for whatever reason, this one resonated with me. But you were like, it's good, it's not great, ease down, Dave. That's what I'm hearing.
That's where I was, yes.
That's what I thought.
Of the three that I watched... nobody was my favorite.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I heard from other people that was good, so it's probably not a completely insane opinion.
Well, I am a dullard. all right. That'll wrap it up for us this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week with more of that time.
Yeah.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.